Hey everybody, my name is Sam Walker. I'm an engineer at AirSwap. This is a workshop about KeySpace, which is a protocol for end-to-end encryption using Ethereum and IPFS. Before I get started, I wanted to give a bit of a prologue for putting this piece of technology in kind of a larger context of what I see of kind of emerging technologies. So the inspiration for KeySpace first came to me about a year ago when I was listening to a podcast by Arthur Falls called The Third Web. He was interviewing a developer named Dominic Tarr, who's the who develops a distributed social media network called Secure Scuttlebutt, if any of you are familiar with that. But the thing I really liked in the interview was he talked about this concept called cypherspace. So cypherspace is what he sees as kind of an emerging style of application development on the net or on the web that has a kind of a proper abstraction between the networking layer and the application layer, and that proper abstraction is enabled for the first time really by use of different cryptographic primitives. I think that having your application logic divorced from your networking logic looks kind of like GraphQL, in that you can kind of specify what your application needs, but you don't have to worry about how it gets to you. So I think some more concrete examples of like what cypherspace is and how this kind of development methodology is going to play out in the future. It's going to be made clear in some later examples, but just to have that context as you kind of watch this presentation. So this is the agenda. We're going to start out on a high level and just answer what is KeySpace, so why was it built, and what are its core components. Then we're going to zoom in a little bit more with an in-depth technical description. So there's kind of three main stages in the user lifecycle within the protocol. We're going to work through each of those. After that is the fun part. We have an interactive example. So there's kind of a demo dApp that you all can load up on either your desktops or your phones. And we can kind of do some peer-to-peer encrypted group messaging amongst each other. And then after that, we'll have some time for questions or exploration to see, what we can do with this kind of protocol. So first, definitions. What is KeySpace? I think the simplest way to sum it up is that KeySpace is a trustless OpenPGP implementation built on top of Ethereum's existing cryptographic key tooling. So some obvious questions come up from this definition. First of all, for those unfamiliar with cryptographic protocols, what is OpenPGP? And secondly, why do we need OpenPGP on Ethereum? So PGP stands for Pretty Good Privacy. It's an encryption program that provides cryptographic privacy and authentication for data communication. PGP is used for signing, encrypting, and decrypting text, emails, files, directories, and whole disk partitions, and to increase the security of email communication. So that's just the definition from Wikipedia. So PGP, a little background, it was developed by a cryptographer named Phil Zimmerman in the 90s. It was first developed as enterprise software. It was first developed as enterprise software in 1991. Around 97, Phil decided that this would only work if it was open source, so he started the OpenPGP initiative. Then around 2014 is when elliptic curve cryptography was added to the protocol spec, which is much lighter weight than the older forms of encryption that the protocol used, like RSA. This kind of lighter footprint allowed it to be more realistically used in the browser. So OpenPGP.js was added about the same time, opening the door for end-to-end encryption, screen-to-screen encryption. So, there's no, it's kind of the standard of encryption that we'd like to have today, which is used by like Telegram or Signal or other things like that. So, why do we need to bring PGP on Ethereum? So, a little background. This came to be because of specific kind of business needs that AirSwap had. So in kind of the history of like DEX development, the first popular DEXs like EtherDelta, all the information was held on-chain, like in the smart contract. So both order posting, order matching, and order settlement all happened on-chain. Kind of second generation DEXs had some improvements upon this to save gas. So protocols like AirSwap, 0x, IDEX, DDEX's Hydra protocol, and DYDX's new limit orders all kind of used a similar approach for gas saving where an order is signed off-chain, it's posted somewhere, matched off-chain, and then settled on-chain. So on AirSwap in particular, the way that the protocol works is that order posting happens peer-to-peer, so makers send orders directly to takers. Matching happens when the taker decides that they want to fill the order, and then the actual settlement happens when the order is filled on-chain. But since all of this is being moved off-chain into messaging, that messaging has to happen somewhere. There's a possible information asymmetry that arises because, like, for example, if AirSwap is hosting the messaging platform, then we kind of have a global view into all the messaging that's happening. That could potentially give us like an unfair advantage of like seeing the trade that's going to happen before it happens, or you know, in more OTC style interaction, we can see people negotiating a trade in plain text. So to kind of eliminate this kind of unfair angle or this unfair view, we need encryption. So if all messages between makers and takers are encrypted, then they're the only ones who are able to see it, and there is no kind of global view to exploit from the angle of being a more technical party or kind of having a global access to the system. So we need both encryption for that reason, and then we need authentication to basically tie the messages that are created to a particular Ethereum address so that if somebody is being abusive in the messages that they send, for example, trying to DDoS the network, we can say, okay, these messages are cryptographically verifiable as having come from this address. We're gonna like disable, you know, that address can't send messages anymore, and then we can kind of see if assets transfer between that address and another address, we can, you know, basically figure out who's abusing the network or have some standard where we can have economic incentives for behaving correctly. So obviously, and by authentication, I just mean a signature and verification of messages. So there's a lot of different cryptographic protocols that you could use for authentication and encryption of messaging, but PGP seemed like the right choice for multiple reasons. One of the main ones is that it's the right age. And what I mean by that is that it's been around long enough that it's fairly safe. It is very robust. It's used all over the world. And it's been around long enough that it has great tooling associated with it, which kind of like helps on the developer lift of implementing a protocol like this. But then it's also simultaneously new enough that it uses cryptographic algorithms like elliptic curve cryptography, which is lightweight enough to use in the browser without negatively impacting the user experience. Okay. So that's kind of like the high-level view of why we needed to implement this trustless version of PGP on Ethereum. So we're going to zoom in a little bit and talk about kind of the specific implementation and how it looks and feels for a user. So the first step in that is a key generation and recovery. So what this means is that we're trying to deterministically generate a PGP key pair from an Ethereum key pair such that we can verify that this Ethereum address generated this PGP key, and that if the PGP key is lost, for whatever reason, we can regenerate it as long as you have control of the wallet. So kind of a practical example of this is if I have my ledger and I generate my keys on one computer and I use those keys to read my encrypted messages, I can then terminate that session, wipe out that information, plug my ledger into another computer, regenerate my PGP keys and use them to decrypt the same messages. So it's kind of it's stateless in a way, it's deterministic, and so that's just kind of one of the properties we wanted to have in the system. The next step after keys are generated is a key distribution and lookup. So if I want to send a encrypted message to you by knowing your Ethereum address, I have to have some way to, you know, look up that Ethereum address and find your PGP key, and I need to be able to cryptographically verify that that is indeed your PGP key, which I can then use that public key to encrypt a message and send it to you. So there needs to be some sort of directory, basically. The initial implementation of this actually for us was a smart contract. So you basically stored your PGP key on IPFS, took the IPFS hash of that key and stored it in a smart contract. And then when I wanted to find the key associated with your address, I would just look it up in a smart contract. Pretty soon, though, we discovered that there is like a whole swath of users who wanted to basically try an application without paying gas up front. You know, as soon as like you have to pay for a transaction, they weren't, you know, as interested in using that application. So there's another alternative way of storing these keys, where instead of storing a contract, you sign it so that you can verify it as yours, and then the signature together with the key can just be stored in any database. And since that signature always exists next with it, you can just pull it and look it up. It doesn't have the same guarantee of availability as a smart contract. So currently that database is hosted by AirSwap. And you know, if AirSwap went away, then that database wouldn't be hosted. But for those users, like, you know, they would just have to regenerate their keys and they could begin using the system again. So there's kind of different options of, like, you know, based on like the longevity, the dependability that you need, you know, the level of trustlessness that you desire, you can, you know, either pay more for that or kind of have more of a low investment alternative. So the third step in this is passive authentication and privacy. So after everything's set up, basically, you know, keys are generated, they're distributed, and they can be looked up, then we can use them at the application level without really having to understand anything about the, you know, the underlying cryptography. So just all messages between peers have the simultaneous guarantee of, if you receive a message, you know for sure that the Ethereum address that sent you that message is who they claim to be. And when you send a message, you know that nobody other than the Ethereum address that you intend to read it will read it. So that's kind of like high level. I got out of order. So zooming in on key generation, so there's actually some, you know, we're not the first people to kind of come up against some of these problems. And many of the cryptographic libraries that wallets, like MetaMask, for example, depend on, like, provide methods of deriving secondary keys from primary keys. But unfortunately, there isn't an RPC spec for kind of exposing these methods to, like, the end user on a DApp. But so the way that we get around that is key generation happens by taking a passphrase, which is just a plain text word or a set of words, and then signing it, and then using that hex string that's generated as kind of the encryption key for that encrypts your private PGP key, basically. So openpgp.js, when you generate a new key pair, you have the option to pass in a passphrase. That's kind of the encryption password. So that signed message becomes the encryption password for your key pair, basically. So that's kind of on a low level how those two are associated. And then once that key is created, IPFS provides kind of cheap, reliable storage. So the way that works for us is that we store the IPFS, we store the key pair in IPFS in, like, basically a redundant set of nodes using a pin set. So, you know, they go from Infura to Pinata to our own IPFS node to Cloudflare and some others. So we kind of use that pin set to, like, replicate across all those nodes. So that kind of makes these key pairs reliably available without having to store them, like, on a smart contract, basically. So key distribution. So this is kind of like the directory or the index that I talked about before. I think I actually covered most of this already, but one thing I wanted to touch on was this idea of multiplexing, which is an idea that kind of comes from libp2p, basically. So if there's basically, like, it's kind of like function overriding, but like on the network level. So if I want, for example, to request some information, I shouldn't have to care about how that information is stored or how it's fetched. I should just be able to, you know, ask for it and have some guarantee about, you know, how it gets to me. So kind of the multiplexing in this case is that we have keys that can be stored on a smart contract or keys that can be stored in a database. And when you look up, you kind of do that lookup of both the smart contract and the database in parallel. On the application level, you know, you don't really care about where that key is stored, you can just use it. And this also allows for the addition of other types of data stores for distributing the keys, one of which we use in our demo, which is coming up shortly. So auth and privacy. So this is kind of the last step in the user lifecycle. So this is like after everything is generated and distributed, we can just enjoy the benefits of everything that the OpenBGP library offers. So on Keyspace, on the Keyspace class, there's four function types that are pretty much everything that they're going to use. You have an encrypt, which takes a message, a plain text message, and the address that you're going to send that encrypted message to. Decrypt, which takes an encrypted message and the from address, so you can verify, you know, that it was sent by the address you claim to send it, and then you can just get the decrypted message that's meant for you. And then we also, in isolation, provide sign and validate as well. So that's all for the high-level overview. Now is the fun part, which is the demo. So this demo will work on both your laptops and phones as long as they're connected to the internet. You can go to the top link there where the live app is on the airswap.github.io/keyspace/devcon. Sorry, that link is not short here. But originally, this would be kind of a lot of cloning repos and interactive coding, and kind of I saw like all the network limitations we seem to have here, so I just kind of spun up this app quickly, which I think should work on. I tested it on pretty throttled internet, so it should work all right. I think this kind of will give us a view into kind of like the inner workings of the protocol without having too much of a bandwidth limitation. So I'll let everybody pull it up, and then I will pull it up on mine and kind of walk everybody through how it's working. So it's basically just it's a React front-end application that uses IPFS PubSub to kind of have group messaging. So one of the cool things about this is that it's a group chat app that doesn't have any central server to it. So basically, everybody's phone and laptop kind of in the room is kind of going to be networked together, and it's going to form a peer-to-peer chat application. I should have mentioned. When you first load the application, it has an option to connect with MetaMask, which that'll also work in like a wallet like Trust. And you can also just generate a wallet inside the app, generate a temporary wallet, which will you can still, you know, use that to communicate since it doesn't currently use any gas. So do most people that are gonna pull it up have it up? Yeah. Anybody still typing? We're good? Okay. All right, so I'm going to get through these steps myself. I'll generate a temporary wallet. So I'm the only peer that I found so far. Hopefully over time, I'm going to find all of you. Are other people at this screen after generating the wallet? Okay. Hey, there's everybody. Okay. So, nice. I hope the mobile display still works with all these addresses in it. I wasn't able to test with that many people. Okay, so I'm gonna be Sammy. Okay, so, whoa. Okay, so this is everybody sharing their PGP keys with each other. Wow. Okay. I definitely have not tested it at this much scale yet, but it's it seems like it's working okay. Yeah. Okay, so I can go into a little bit of I can go into a little bit of what's going on here. So basically, on this far tab, I think it says peer on your phone. On the desktop, it says peer discovery protocol. So basically, this is instead of using a database or a contract to distribute keys, we all connect to the same IPFS pub/sub topic. So there's basically one IPFS server that we reach out to and say, hey, I'm listening to this topic. Then when other people connect, they also reach out to that same server and say, I'm listening to this topic. And we kind of find each other all through that way, and then peer directly with each other. Then after we're all peered, we broadcast our key, and then we send a message, which is what we call a request introduction, which basically is like a, we send a message to the pub sub topic that is asking other people for their keys, and then everybody else responds to that person with their keys, basically. So it's kind of like a many-to-many messaging system for kind of building this dynamic database of keys. And like, so but as you can see, the more people that are added, the more messaging, or the more people are requesting everyone's keys, the more messages that are sent. So that's just gonna go crazy probably right now. So then down here on the no one peer screen, I definitely did not design this for this many people to use. I built this like yesterday. So you can basically choose the keys or the identities that you actually want to send encrypted messages to, and then when you let's say hello. And then sorry to the people that I didn't use that, but just had to be an example. And so then basically everybody that I selected will get a copy of that message that they can decrypt, but everybody gets everybody's message. So, but the thing is that only the people who I encrypted that message specifically for will be able to decrypt it. I'm going to refresh this page because all the people joined have broke my view. So to take it kind of back to the original prologue of the talk and the idea of cyberspace, that's kind of what I built this application of an example of. So the actual data transport like layer of this application is completely public and anybody can read it. It takes place on a public IPFS topic, but there actually is a complex application logic of, you know, permissioned group chat happening in this public forum. So this is kind of the idea of cyberspace, that we can kind of divorce application logic from transport network logic and even database storage logic. Like, we shouldn't have to care about where the data for this application lives. All we have to care about is availability. That part still hasn't really been solved yet. But then just write our own application logic using, you know, these different cryptographic primitives to kind of enforce the rules of our application. So this application, you know, it's totally peer-to-peer. It just exists on all of our phones and our laptops in this room. And, you know, we're basically sending each other plain text messages, but then all these different cryptographic tools kind of allow us to have a structured application built in this really simple context. And for those of you on desktop, this couldn't really fit in the mobile view, but you can actually look at the key space parameters that I kind of talked through in the first portion. So you have like your unsigned seed. So this is like what you sign to generate your password. This is the password that, you know, basically encrypts your private key. then this is the PGP public key and the encrypted PGP private key. So these are kind of the, you know, the building blocks that we're using to build this application. Trying to think if there's anything else about this one. The nickname. I can't get to it because there's too many people now. But as those of you who have said it, you know, the nickname is just exists as one other type of specialized message on the network, so you can kind of announce your nickname when you announce your key pair. That's it for the. I have one other thing. So if you have this loaded and you actually want to look at some of the code for the application, you can click the question mark in the top right and it'll open up the GitHub. Kind of talks a little bit about what it is, links to the application, links to the slides and the slideshow, and then links to KeySpace, which is bundled as part of AirSwap.js. You can look at the code for the application, even though I wrote it really fast, so it's not very good, or it's messy. But I would instead suggest that you actually look at the KeySpace in the AirSwap.js library, which actually has some better examples and documentation and is easier to use. If you want to include KeySpace in your application, this is where you would go to figure out how to do that. I think that is that's it for my demo. So my epilogue was about putting it in the context of Cyberspace, and this kind of application right now it's running in public on IPFS, but it could be running on any kind of transport. Any messaging system, you could have an encrypted messaging system built inside of it, and the storage can happen anywhere. I think that the initial AirSwap trading network was built on RabbitMQ, and it's easily portable now to IPFS because of that separation of concerns that we were talking about. I think that if we follow kind of this paradigm, I think that applications that we build in the future that are intrinsically tied to a certain type of web transport layer, like for example, fetching data over HTTP, fetching something from WebSocket, it's gonna start to feel like spaghetti code. It's gonna start to feel like expensive and full of tech debt because it's hard to port. It's hard to, you have all these assumptions in your code about how the data comes to you, how it's available, and the kind of errors that will happen when you fetch it. And I think that with this kind of approach to building applications, you have a separation of concerns such that you can actually port your application to different types of transports without having a lot of tech debt that you have to resolve. So yeah, that's it for my presentation. I have time for some questions.
Why did you choose to encrypt the key using a password rather than using the Diffie-Hellman elliptic with the elliptic curve that you already have from the Ethereum address?
I think it's because it's not available to DApp users over a JSON RPC message. It's not part of the standard JSON RPC message format for interaction with the private key, basically. So the only cryptographic function that we have available to us as people who build applications that work on top of wallets are basically personal sign, send transaction. There's a lot of cryptographic primitives that would be useful. When I was first building this and I had a need for encryption, I wanted to actually, why can't I use the Ethereum private key to encrypt data, data, but it's possible, theoretically it's possible, those functions are in the underlying cryptographic libraries that a wallet like Ledger or MetaMask uses, but it's just the spec for making those functions available is it's far away, and it's gonna be a long time until anything like that is, so this is kind of a way of working around that limitation.
Do you have to sign the same message every time to get the password?
Yeah, so basically, kind of what I was talking about earlier, like there's a bunch of different types of users who want to use an application like this. Yeah. Some are more hardcore about like their privacy, and some people want something that's more convenient that they don't have to think about very much. So if you want to, for those users who want something that's very convenient and they're not as like worried about privacy, basically you can just kind of sign a, you know, a default phrase that we choose, you know, and kind of provide to you every time to sign. So then it's kind of like you don't have to remember the passphrase and you can kind of deterministically regenerate it. If you want another layer of privacy, you know, you can choose your own passphrase. It's a secret to you that nobody else knows. But then if you lose that passphrase, then, you know, you lose access to your messages. So, but that's available for users who want a better layer of privacy. Yeah.
Can you think of any practical use cases to employ KeySpace apart from the example you just showed?
So it's one thing that the initial implementation of PGP, like, functions, it uses this concept called the web of trust to function, which is basically like people can trust PGP keys if other keys that they already trust also trust that those PGP keys. So like when the protocol was first developed, you know, like all the academic nerds would have signing parties and get together and you know, trade PGP keys in person so they could kind of have that base level of trust and build this like kind of trusted network. And then off of that, they like, you know, built a larger network, and it was kind of like that was how trust was like built like initially. Like, which is kind of actually now cited as kind of a, it's more of a critique of PGP, that's kind of like a limitation of the protocol. KeySpace is more limited in scope, since it's only about, instead of binding identities to a real person, you're binding identities to you know, an Ethereum address, basically. But you don't have to worry about that same kind of web of trust, which has some kind of scalability issues. But I think there are some interesting opportunities with like connecting to systems like KeyBase, where like identity and a cryptographic key are already bound by other means. So then it kind of like allows you to use PGP in a more, you know, more modularly, you know, where you can kind of strap it onto other existing networks of trust, basically, as long as they have cryptographic capabilities. All right, that's it. Thanks, everybody.